The executive producer for this episode of Walnut Grove Cast is Chelsea Wofford.
Hello and welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grove Cast. If you haven't listened and subscribed, please check out the newest shows from Walnut Grove Cast, Bonnet Heads, and the Little House Book Club. They are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or just visit walnutgrovecast.com for more information. As always, these podcasts are free of charge as well as commercial free, thanks to the following supporters: Marianne Lockwood, Stephanie Bailey, Rana Ludwig, Stacey Corrigan, Whitney Griggs, Jill Stellman, Chris Cooling from the Forgotten TV podcast, Brian Sellers, Dean Almanzo Butler, Lori Dorian, Matt Mercier, Christina Pedersen, Cheryl Van Dusen, Michelle Terrier, Brian C. Mellenbacher, Leah Chiapino, Margaret LaVisca, Jennifer Jones, Julia Schroeder, Tanya Weber, JJ Hurley, Elizabeth Villamagna, Melissa Hef Pint Gilbert, Robin Lee, Shannon Quinton, Lydia Cucucci from Late Nights with Hitchcock podcast, Elvira Dabas, Candy Gleason, Angie Zidava, Megan Eichner, Kelly Milkey from the Dr. Quincast podcast, Alicia Olin, Rachel Boren, Stephanie Carnes, Katie Bollinger, Julia Monin, Rebecca Frederick, Peyton England, Stacey Keller, Bobby Young, Teresa Trapp, Jeannie Schneider Mitchell, Max Duration, Whitney Cole, Laura Furman, Val Williams, Anne Quinn, The No Agenda Podcast, Jeannie Comer, Aaron Wortman, Don Roberts, Rebecca Harris, Sherry Benner, Angela Bowen from the Looking Back on My Wonder Years, A Wonder Years podcast, Susan King, Leah Mitchell from the Retro TV podcast, Jeff Griffin, Megan Parker, Michelle Ferguson, Erin McManus, Andre Bjargesen, Chelsea Wofford, Marissa Baker, Thori Rodriguez, Matilda Smith-Thompson, Cheyenne Hampton, Laura Solarin, Spunky Cheek, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama, and Suzanne Holland. Thank you all for your support. You make this podcast possible, and in my eyes, it is truly your podcast. So if you have any ideas, suggestions, or even demands, please feel free to reach out to me. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Welcome to Walnut Grove Cast. My name is Mark, and I have on today, returning to the show, Chris Pedersen. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing well. Thank you for having me on, Mark.
Yeah, man. We had a little bit of a scheduling back and forth, but we finally made it. We're here, and we are ready to review the greatest episode of The Last Prairie. I don't know if this is the greatest episode. This is an interesting episode, and this is one that was heavily in the rotation, it seemed, when I was a kid. Do you remember this one from when you were a kid?
I do. I always liked it. Something about it was just a little different. But it never seems to get a lot of, I guess you'd say, publicity. I mean, it's never really talked about a lot as far as what I can see. But yes, I do remember it.
Do you want to talk? What is the episode we're talking about today?
The Odyssey.
The Odyssey. It just sounds like I think there was a video game system called the Odyssey. Magnavox, I think, made the Magnavox
Odyssey. I think so, too.
And this episode originally aired March 19th, 1979. And, yeah, I mean, this is an interesting episode. We get introduced to a character who we've never seen before. Well, we've seen the actor before, but we've never seen this character before. Which usually means that they're either going to move away or die, right? That's kind of the way it goes right. in the universe of Little House on the Prairie, unfortunately. And spoiler alert, you know, it's the latter. Well, we think. We actually don't see this happen on the screen.
Right.
Maybe at a recovery. Back in these days, it was considered healthy to go to the ocean and breathe in the salt air. That was one of the treatments. But we'll get into all of that stuff. Now, we open up in this episode of Little House on the Prairie in a way that I think has never been done before in any other episode. And that's, we get the title card with no music. There's no music in the intro. It's just nature sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to play this first clip where Dylan, which is, I like to call him Mr. Smarty Pants, is just going on and on and on. So this is our introduction to the episode.
Neptune, the sea god, he hated Odysseus and planned to sink all the Greek ships in a storm. But Iolaus, who is the father of the winds, tied his sons up in a leather bag and gave it to Odysseus. Now, with no winds, the sea was like glass. Neptune was helpless. Everything would have been all right, too, if Odysseus' men hadn't stolen the bag and opened it.
How do you ever win the Trojan War with such a dumb army?
Well, never mind about that. Then what happened?
Well, the winds escaped and turned the sea into huge crashing waves. It tossed the ship around like driftwood. Finally, it washed up on the land of the Laestrygonians, who were cannibals, and ate most of the men.
Serves him right.
That was the end of Odysseus.
Oh, no. He eventually made it back to his home in Ithaca. It took him 10 years, though. Wish I could do it.
Get eaten by cannibals?
No. See the ocean.
And this becomes the trend of the entire show. I mean, the episode. And so we have Steve Shaw plays this character, Dylan Whitaker. And I'd say that Steve had a little bit of a little mustache going on throughout this episode. Did you notice that?
I didn't really notice that, no.
Oh, I always notice this. He's probably grown it for like 6 years or something. Take the slightest bit of a mustache. I'm like, what? Come on, kid. Have Albert teach you to shave. But he's a painter, and he's we're in a part of the forest that I've never seen on the show. Have you? I mean, this does not feel like Plum Creek.
It's a whole new clip that I've never. They went to a whole new part of Sonora, California.
It's beautiful, by the way. I mean, it is stunning, some of the shots of nature that we get in this particular episode. But this does not feel like Walnut Grove to me. But he goes on. I just want to say, some of these clips are a little bit long initially, but I think it's necessary to kind of set up where we're going. And so I apologize in advance for some of these clips that are about a minute and a half to 2 minutes long. But here we go. He continues.
My pa was the same way. Always promised we'd go together. We would have too. Well, there I go dreaming again. My ma told me she doesn't think I'm here half the time.
Time. Oh my gosh, we gotta go.
Yeah, see ya.
See
ya. It's hilarious. In unison. The sea. So yeah, he wants to go see the sea, it seems. He's a pretty intense actor, right? Do you want to talk about what, sadly, what would happen to this actor many years after he would play Dylan?
Yes, and unfortunately in 1990, he was killed in a car accident. Had a head-on collision with a garbage truck, from what I understand. Had a great career on Knots Landing for almost, I think, the whole run of the show. Mm-hmm. Did a few other things in between. And unfortunately, at the age of 25, he passed away way too young.
Did he pass away while he was a character on Knots Landing? Do you know?
From what I understand, he had been off the show a couple years. Or I think he just had guest appearances, but his main his main run had been done.
I see.
His contract had been fulfilled. So usually I, you know, like we talked about earlier, I research a lot of the guest stars and find out what happened to this person or that person over the years. And that's what I came up with.
Hmm. He would also play Sam Delano from Gold Country 2 years prior to this.
I remember that.
And
yeah, did a very good crime scene in that one.
You know, I really like this actor, and there was something about him that's very much like very 70s feeling. It's a real shame when you hear something like that happen, especially, you know, he's only 25 years old when it happened.
So right.
Real shame.
Absolutely.
Who knows where, you know, his career could have gone had, had he survived that. So let's see. We learned that Dylan just loves to paint and he stays up at all late. It's one of the few times that we know what time it is on the show. We don't hear about time very often. Like it's 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, but this time we get a little bit of a reference, and we even have, they have a clock that's pretty nice. So maybe that's why they had a nice, store-bought and catalog clock. But here we go. He's like at the dinner table painting.
It's awful late, honey.
Something's not right. What do you think?
I'm very moody. Things are never that bad. Maybe it needs just a touch of sunlight.
Yeah, that's it.
So, yeah, I like the fact that the kid is, he takes it really seriously. How old do you think he's supposed to be?
I'd say about 13, 14.
Yeah, I was thinking even older. Because I don't know. I was thinking like 15 or 16, but it's still in the same neighborhood. But he's a pretty intense kid, and he takes all of this really seriously. And his mom seems pretty supportive and nice. I don't know. I feel like everything's pretty good. But then out of nowhere, he gets a nosebleed. I'm going to play some of that.
Oh, no.
What?
Another nosebleed.
Did you get back?
Oh, thanks, Ma.
If you listen, this is some interesting voiceover work. Right here, it's like it's very much like recorded separately, I'm guessing.
That's the third nosebleed this week. I'm gonna take you into Doc Baker.
Ma, they're only nosebleeds.
You may be the man in this house, but I'm still your mother. Now come on, into bed.
He's like, no, not Doc Baker. He'll give me some of that morphine. Yeah, he, yeah, I guess no kid wants to go to the doctor. So let's see. Doc comes and he examines him. And he brings the diagnosis out to mom.
Dylan doesn't lead a very active life, does he, Mrs. Whittaker?
Well, his mind's always working, but no, he paints more than he runs.
He's had more than the usual share of colds, fevers, sore throats, that kind of thing.
Only recently, in the last 6 months or so. Something's wrong.
No, so this is one of these long clips, by the way. I just want to give you a little bit of a warning. Also, it's like he's not very active, is he? It's like, well, you know, come on. Leave him
Mark,
alone.
It sounds a little devil on my end.
Oh, is it garbled?
Yeah, it's kind of garbled. I can't understand you.
Oh, okay. I'm going to pause this. Hold on.
Okay.
So this is a pretty long clip, and the bottom line is we're getting our diagnosis. Yeah, I just wanted to give you a little bit of a heads up that was a kind of a long clip that I'm playing right now.
Wrong?
Okay.
Well, all of Dylan's symptoms... and the blood sample seemed to point towards a particular disease. The fevers, the throat infections, the pain in the knees. Used to be diagnosed as rheumatic fever.
But it isn't.
No. All I can suggest is rest. The least exertion, the better.
Well, and then what?
So yeah, I mean, so we learn that the kid has leukemia, which I just find it interesting that Doc Baker can even diagnose this.
Interestingly that you mentioned that. I looked that up the other night. I think it said it was originally diagnosed in 1847.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that. I didn't, like you said, I would have never suspected they even had a name for it back then. But apparently, I don't know if they called it that, but that's when they originally found it.
Yeah, I find it interesting that he would even be able to determine that it's leukemia based off of looking through the microscope and his symptoms. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of, right. I mean, of course, you know, of course it's a TV show. But at the same time, I just wanted to mention, so Albert, let's just fast forward a little bit to Albert when Albert is dying, right? Do you remember why, like, what Albert was dying from?
From what I understood, it was like leukemia as well, but I don't remember them ever actually saying that.
See, this is what's weird. All right, so I was talking to Kelly Milkey, who does Dr. Quincast with me and on the show quite a bit, and she writes the Prairie Review. And we were talking about it, and yeah, it's not mentioned once in the episode. And what's interesting about that is, I remember it very clearly that Albert died from leukemia. So I have to wonder if maybe was there another version that was aired? Because I was 10 years old when I saw that. And there's no way I would have been able to come up with leukemia on my own.
Yeah, I just figured that's what it was based on, because they talked about, I think they did talk about his blood count or something like that, but they never actually said leukemia. But, you know, now that you mention it, watching, you know, I have all the DVDs, but I have, whenever I watch the reruns too, you know, there's stuff on the reruns that has more than the DVDs have. So I see new things. I'm like, oh, I don't have that on my DVDs.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and I've never been able to figure out why the DVDs are edited, you know, because there's no commercials, but apparently they are. But I'm like, oh, I wish I had that on my DVDs. There's so much more information that I missed on it, you know.
This is where I want to try to, because it reminds me of like the Mandela effect, which is just like kind of a fun thing to kind of talk about. But it's not really possible for so many people to accidentally choose the same mistaken illness that this character died from. So across the board, everybody will say he died from leukemia.
Right.
So Walnut Grove Cast is going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to figure this out. Even if we have to sit through Betamax copies from the 80s, somebody's got to have the original on tape somewhere. So I'll be on the hunt, but anyway, back to the show. This is the kind of stuff I think about, you know. They don't tell Dylan. What do you think about that?
You know, he's pretty smart. I mean, obviously he ends up figuring it out, but I think he was mature enough to where he could have handled it. You know, I think that was the right thing to do. But I think just for his mom's sake, I think she was just trying to
protect him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but, and she ends up telling him, she ends up basically determining, saying this is exactly what the deal is, and I felt better about that. I just felt like maybe Doc Baker should have been the person to explain a little bit to him.
Right.
Because in the next scene, he's complaining about, she doesn't want him to go outside, doesn't want him to live life, and he's like, I want to get out of here. I want to look at nature and paint and do the things that I love doing. Get out of my way, Mom.
Right. And I know a lot of that is cut out of the DVDs, too. part of that scene.
Really?
So that's interesting that you mentioned that. Yeah, they only have part of it in there. And the whole time, though, I think it's funny how she's telling him. I mean, he's telling, Doc Baker's telling his mother, yet he's just, an earshot away, and he comes out behind those curtains, and like he wouldn't be able to hear what they were actually talking about. But, you know, that's just TV magic, I guess.
So you said it's missing on the DVDs? Because I have the DVD set, yeah, but I also have the Blu-ray set. And what I'm watching right now is I ripped all of my Blu-rays. And the Blu-ray has all that. Okay. But I'm wondering, does the DVD really have it missing?
Well, I have the I'm a Vision ones, though, from the early 2000s.
Oh, okay.
Would you air the same set you have?
I don't know. I'm going to tell you right now which one I have. Because I have it right here.
Mine are...
I have the one that's shaped like the little house.
Oh, okay. No, I don't, that's the newer version. I have the first ones where I had to buy them. I bought them all as they came out. Took about a year to get all of them, I think, or longer.
Yeah, this one is it's I don't know who made it. Just
okay. So do you find that those ones are all uncut?
I haven't noticed anything missing, but the Blu-rays are not not cut. I bought the DVDs, but I don't watch the DVDs. I rip them. I don't watch any of them. I'm too lazy to get up and swap out a disc. That's like so like 2010 to swap out the disc.
Okay. Sure.
So Albert and Laura are kind of hanging out in this really beautiful tree. This scene is like, it looks like they're in a redwood forest or something. The trees aren't really big enough, but they're in this one tree and it's covered in moss and it's just kind of beautiful. But they kind of love Dylan, their best friend Dylan, who we've never heard of before. So here's some of that.
Awful quiet today, Dylan.
Just listening. Don't you hear it?
What?
The ocean. If you really listen, you can hear the waves.
You got better ears than I do. Want to go fishing?
Can I trust you with a secret?
You don't have to ask that.
Of course you can't. You can't trust this kid for anything, man. Run for the hills.
I'm going to see the ocean.
Well, that's no secret.
I mean tonight.
What? You're talking crazy.
No, I'm not. I have to do it now.
Why?
I'm gonna die.
I was waiting for the, we're all gonna die, Dylan. But no, we didn't. We didn't get that. So, this kid is pretty damn mature. I mean, dealing with this and pretty intense. Albert doesn't have too much faith. Yeah. Albert immediately is, this is what he thinks of Dylan.
He'll never even make it. He's never been off the farm.
He doesn't have a lot of faith in him. And you know what? Albert is a good friend because he's going to go along. He's like, I'm going. And there's nothing you can do to stop me. Because they need Albert's street smarts. Now, this is where Laura kind of practically threatens Pa. I don't know if you missed this little nugget. Laura's in the hanging out in the man shed with Pa, just kind of just rapping.
Pa?
Mm-hmm.
What would you do if you only had a month to live?
That's a real threat. I mean, what are you doing here? I would take that as a threat.
Right. Yeah. Nice surprise.
You see, Charles, make a fist. Like, what do you mean, half pint? I have to take you down.
What kind of question is that?
It's a summer project for school.
I'll be honest with you, I never gave it much thought.
Well, there must be something you'd want to do.
Well, there is, but it'd take me a lot more than a month.
Well, what is it?
I'd like to live long enough to see all my children grow up, be happy, have families of their own.
Aw.
That's all?
That's all? It's kind of hilarious.
That's all. It seems like an awful lot to me.
But if somebody had a special dream, and they only had 1 month to live, do you think they should try no matter what?
Yeah, I'm sure they should.
And would you help them if you could?
I'd do my best.
Thanks, Pa.
Charles is always giving, like, advice. Always a good guy doing it. Laura's decided that she's coming along for the ride. And they're going
to... Surprise to Albert.
Yeah, Laura's like, I'm not Laura. Albert's just kind of like, what? You're not coming. But she's coming. And the next day is Carrie's birthday, which I think was a real sweet little thing to throw in there, but it kind of got derailed. And they kind of ruined Carrie's birthday a little bit. They decide to wrap a letter explaining that they're running away with Dylan, but they'll be back. I thought that was kind of a strange way to go about it. Let's see. It's kind of cute where Carrie wakes up and let's see. Hopefully this is correct.
What are you doing?
Oh no, I did the thing wrong. Sorry. Sorry, my clip is all messed up.
Your brother and sister down.
Albert, Laura, come down. Hurry up.
But they're gone. And I love the fact that she's like, can I just open one? And the first one she opened is the letter. It's just like,
right.
What's this crap? I wanted a My Little Pony watch or something like that. Let's see. Pa reads the letter and essentially, shall you actually play what the letter has in it? I think that's kind of important here.
Pa, it's not his birthday. I'm sorry we had to leave like this, but at least it's summer so we won't miss any school.
So they're gone. Like, at least it's summer. I like how the letter's written kind of like, look, at least it's summer. It's so
absolutely
funny. They run into this guy with a patch who's a little bit of a little shady at first, Dylan, Laura, and Albert kind of come across and they're wondering if he could help them get to the train depot so that they can take the train. What is it, what do they call it, it's train station. So they could take the train to the west, right? Dylan's starting to cough a lot. I guess going on this trip has really exasperated his health. I mean, exasperated the entire leukemia. And cause he seemed fine before for the most part, but I don't know. I guess leukemia can be pretty rapid under certain circumstances.
The excitement of going is getting to him, and the old man definitely takes notice.
Yeah. He's like, all right, I'll get you there. And he seems pretty nice guy, actually. Charles decides to go over to Dylan's mom's house and interrogate her.
Right.
Yeah. I know you're hiding those kids.
I know he was sick.
Oh, wait, sorry. Here we go.
All right. I'll get you to the train. Did Dylan know he was sick?
I didn't have to tell him. He knew.
I just can't understand him going on a trip when they know he's ill.
I don't know.
They're talking about missing school like it's some kind of long journey or something.
To help Dylan find his dream.
She's just looking at Dylan's paintings, which are pretty much decorated throughout the house. And how far are you from the ocean?
About an hour and a half.
Okay, so you've got a little bit of a distance. If I were to drive to the ocean, I'd be there in like maybe 10 minutes or so. So,
oh wow,
yeah. That's... Well, Long Island, it's legitimately an island. So,
absolutely.
It's a really amazing thing to see the ocean. I think it's something that maybe we take for granted a little bit, and you know, it's just one of those things that is kind of an incredible thing if you just kind of sit there and look at it. I remember when I first moved out to California, I remember going, I lived in a city called Long Beach in New York.
Uh-huh.
And I know there's also a California Long Beach, but so I'm looking at the Atlantic Ocean, and then, you know, 6 hours later, I'm looking at the Pacific Ocean. So it's one of those kind of weird type of things where it's like, oh, I got to do it in a matter of half a day. Pretty cool. So they determine that he's on his way to the ocean. Now, I just want to look up real quick how far Walnut Grove is to the ocean. Because let's be real here. I mean, this is something that would have a real distance to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What is the...
I'll check my phone too.
Let's see. I mean, if they just go straight... I mean, they didn't say they were necessarily going to California. But... right across in Oregon is, let's just say, Bandon. Bandon, Oregon. That is... 1,774 miles. I mean, that's crazy. Kind of, you know, incredibly impossible.
Going by train, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you would definitely have to, I mean, what was the city back then? Oh, no, didn't they go to San Francisco?
San Francisco, yeah, because they met William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah, which was not possible, actually. that's another thing that Kelly Milkey mentioned, is that Hearst would have been 16 years old at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's about the same mileage, 1,746 miles. And yeah, I mean, and it seems like they went in a matter of, what, a day and a half? This would have been, I would say, several weeks. Maybe not several weeks, but how long do you think? A train ride?
Oh, probably...
a week at least, right? Maybe
4 days. Probably just 4 days, I would think, maybe.
If it's just ongoing, I'm
not sure how fast does an old train like that go?
I don't think it goes that quickly. I mean, we're talking maybe like, what, 50 miles per hour?
Okay, so maybe 4 days if they're going around the clock.
And they have to stop and get new coal, fill up the water reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not
buying. Yeah, I've got 1,840 miles from Walnut Grove to San Francisco.
Huh, it's weird that I have a different number.
Uh-huh.
But still, it's a tremendous amount of... it's a tremendous distance. Charles actually doesn't even need to shave the whole time, it seems. Which is just really great. If you notice, he doesn't even get a 5 o'clock shadow.
Right.
Let's see. What is next here? Oops. I don't know what I just did, but I closed. Give me a second here. Holy technical issues. All right. What is the next? So basically, we get a shot of this tough guy who's getting rid of the people who are kind of hopping on board of the trains. Very often they were referred to as hobos. And the origin of the word hobos is actually homeless boys. And it was about this. Mm-hmm. It was about the homeless boys who would hop the trains and travel this way. Interesting little fun fact. Sorry, I have to cue this up again. I messed up. But yeah, this guy is pretty tough. This guy is pretty horrible. But the guy with the patch kind of comes into play. He helps them distract him. Distract this... what would you even call that guy? Like the bouncer? Like they just want to make sure he's security, I guess.
Intermediator.
Right. He walks around with a billy club, basically, and he just threatens people constantly.
Uh-huh.
But he's carrying a bunch of pots and pans. He drops them right in front of him. And as he's making all this ruckus, the kids jump up on the train. And they're like, right. Woohoo! So here we go. I'm going to play some of this where they're just kind of like, yeah, we made it.
We made it! Next stop, California.
Not really. I wouldn't say that the next stop is California.
Pacific Ocean.
So it's kind of cool. Like, I kind of wish we had a little bit of a backstory of this kid. I wish that we knew Dylan from maybe two other episodes. Charles shows up and he's asking about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a cool shot where, no, he didn't get the horse yet. This is where this kind of comes into play. Mr. Patch hears that Charles is looking for the kids.
Right.
Hey, mister, what business you got with them kids? See, maybe, maybe not. You ain't no sheriff or nothing.
No. Two of the children are mine. They're traveling with a friend. He's real sick.
Bill.
Yeah.
That train stops in Caldwell. They're on it. You leave right now, you might be able to catch it.
So he does. He's Charles with a bright... He has a white shirt on, and he's not afraid to get it dirty.
One of his many times he jumps on a horse to go catch a train.
This is one of the... Yeah, right. But he's also doing this alone, which is not very much in the spirit of Little House on the Prairie. There's usually a group of people doing a search party.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's weird that, you know, Charles right. would be on his own. Who would he have? He would have... In this season, is Victor...
Garvey's,
Jonathan Garvey would be there, wouldn't he? Doesn't make total sense, but that's kind of like where we're going with this episode. This is definitely a one-off weird episode.
Yes, definitely.
Now for the best character on the show. This guy kind of just jumps on the train, and he wants them sandwiches.
Traveler?
Oh, I like
Shame
that guy.
Oh, my God. It's
you.
Well, I don't like no company, so you stay away from me.
Quite deranged.
Yeah, this guy is, like, super intense. You stay away from me.
Yeah. What do you got in that case?
Yeah, well, this is before that. This is where he's like, I'm hungry.
Give me them sandwiches.
Give me them sandwiches. No, I'm not going to give you my sandwiches. And we get this ridiculous close-up of him. So give me them sandwiches. It's really hilarious.
Uh-huh.
We will not.
Give me the sandwiches. Give me them.
You know what? Take the sandwiches. This guy is intense.
I thought he was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's not intentionally added for comic relief, but I couldn't stop laughing when I saw that.
I know. I just think that was funny.
So Laura's like, just take the sandwiches, just take them. And Albert is questioning it.
He could have killed you.
I wasn't hungry anyway.
Well, I was.
Albert's always like, well, I was. I thought that Albert would scheme something to trick him or do something. But no. Because you have to imagine Albert's dealt with these kind of crazy people.
Although being on the train like that, with no place to really go, that's probably why he refrained from doing that, I think.
I don't know. It's Albert. He works best under pressure, I think. But the guy, after he's eaten the sandwiches, now he takes his attention back to the kids.
Nothing.
What do you got in that case? What do you got in there?
Nothing.
Money? What? Toss it over.
You took everything we had.
Why don't you just leave us alone? We're not bothering you.
Here, Angel, now that bothers me. Now you toss that over.
No!
This guy does not like Albert. Whenever Albert opens his mouth, he's like, I'm going to kill you, you little... Oh, my God. Yeah, I just had to take a screenshot. This is kind of weird looking. It's,
Stop it! Leave him alone!
No! Let me go! No!
So, he's grabbing Albert and he's going to like, throw him off the train. Like, it's crazy. This guy is deranged. But they figure something out. Albert's, you know, Albert's just holding on to anything. And Laura just shoves the guy, which is crazy. Laura's, like, saving the day. Let's see. This is...
I pushed him off the train.
I'll never make fun of girls again.
It's always a nice little Albert quote. I'll never make fun of girls again. Let's see. Now, they might not have food, but of course they're going to need water. So Albert decides to go and get water. He goes up to this guy who's playing harmonica, and he trades his knife for his water cup. So strange. I didn't really understand the whole point of this. Yeah. You know, it's
The knife and the cap, right?
Was it the knife and the cap?
He goes, just for an old cup.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, well, isn't your dear mom worth it or something like that?
Yeah, because he had the lie that his mom needed it. Interesting. So here we are. He brings the cup of water and they're busted by the Billy Club guy.
Somewhere, Shorty.
Just looking.
Yeah.
It says brakeman, so he's a brakeman, which he breaks people's bones. But no, he just works there, I guess. He works the brakes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just, I always like to grab these screenshots so people are like, how do you know? Well, I have a screenshot.
This boxcar has always been full of rats. All right, you two. Out! I said, oh, don't you care good?
Lee, sir, can we just stay this once? We're going to the ocean.
Out!
This kid is like a total hippie. We're going to the ocean. Get out! Dylan is a total hippie. You know, he's... It's just... Can't we just stay, sir? No! Charles arrives... He finds their bag, starts walking around, and he locates them. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd give all of you whippings hearing us like that.
It's my fault, Mr. Ingalls. It was my idea to come. They just wanted help.
Well, none of you have the sense you were born with. Come on, let's get started home.
You go on, it's all right.
Dylan, what are you talking about?
But I have to keep going.
I'm going to play this whole clip because I think this is great how they convince Charles to kind of come along and head to California.
You think I chased you halfway across the country and then I'm going to let you just keep on going?
I have to.
Please, Pa. We can't give up now.
I'm sorry, Halfline. It's just too crazy. Besides, Dylan, I promised your mother.
To what? Take me back home so she can watch me die? Like she watched my pa die? Don't you see, Mr. Ingalls? I'm never going to get another chance.
Do we ever learn how his father died? I don't think they mention it.
No, he never says anything about that.
I mean, do we assume that it was leukemia? I mean, I don't think it's... I don't know. Maybe it was whatever it Albert had. Hereditary. Whatever Albert had.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if leukemia is hereditary. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
People are screaming at me right now. Of course it is. Or of course it's not.
Cancer could be. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'm running out of time.
The doctor said if you'd rest.
It may happen sooner this way. But I'd rather be out here. Doing what's really important to me. Than just lying in a bed waiting. Besides, I promised my pa I'd go to the ocean one day. And I have to keep that promise.
What about your mother?
I just want her to remember me as I was. Let me do it my way. Isn't it my choice, my life?
You even said you'd help a friend find his dream if you could.
So they convince Pa to come along with the kid. Now it's a kidnapping, technically.
Falls into the trap.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he falls into the trap. So leukemia is a genetic disease, but most cases are thought to not be hereditary. But there is one that is inherited called familial acute myeloid leukemia.
Okay, I've heard of that one.
And so I'm not really sure what kinds there were, but nonetheless, Charles, he's a sucker for it. He's like, all right, we're going on an adventure, Half Pint. Let's see. We get probably the most daring thing to happen in the entire episode, and that's where Albert decides to sneak onto the train into the food car and to get food.
To get breakfast, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of incredible. Let's see. I'm going to go to play that little scene. I watched this a couple times because I just thought it was a perfect Albert moment.
Thank you.
What you got?
Ham and cheese? Egg?
Any plain ham? My Aunt Karen doesn't like cheese.
Take it or leave it.
Guess you can peel it off. Two of each.
All right. Anything else? Got some nice apples.
Sounds good. A four of them.
All right.
And my Aunt Crime loves milk.
One cup?
No, you better make it the whole thing. She really likes it.
All right. That'll be, let's see, that's $1.08.
Oh, my Auntie Crime will pay you. She's right out there.
What? Where?
So he runs off and yells, crime doesn't pay. Like, what just happened? Oh, my God.
And desperation.
Yeah. So it's about, a little over $25 worth of food right there. Yeah. Desperation. I mean, these people, I don't know how long it would currently take. I'm going to do a quick search to see how long it would take to take a train from from maybe Wanacrove or a neighboring city to California. But I'm going to guess it's more than just a few days. Maybe not. I could be just totally wrong.
I'll see if I can find it too.
Let's see. So he runs off and Charles wakes up and he's like, where's Albert? Dylan?
Stop him. He went for something to eat. Oh, dear God.
Breakfast is served.
Now, what on earth have you been up to, young man?
Getting breakfast.
You mean stealing breakfast, don't you?
Yes, sir.
What am I going to do with you? Right now, when this train stops, you're going to pay what you owe for that food.
Yes, sir.
How much did it cost?
$1.08.
Well, that's good. $1.08, that's about all I have left. There's nothing we can do about it now. We might as well eat.
Yes, sir.
How come I wasn't invited? Saw your little friend out taking a walk. You all wouldn't take my advice, would you?
Listen, Mr. Weaver.
No. No, you listen, friend. Nobody rides my train for free. So now, you're gonna pay for this ride.
So I guess he's never heard of Charles Ingalls.
That's a good scene, too. Really good scene.
And Charles gets like a bunch of good hits and knocks him out. Let's see.
I got a sick boy in his train who wants to go see the ocean. And he's going to see it. Or the conductor $1.08 and we're going to pay him. But nobody, not you or anybody else, is going to stop us. You understand me?
He's got those Charles Ingalls fist of steel. You don't mess around with this man.
I like the way the brakeman's laying on the ground with his face all bloody, and he nods, yes, I'm not going to bother you anymore.
Yeah, exactly. He just leaves, right? So Dylan is now kind of like, I'm laughing, but he's got this terrible nosebleed. It's just, this kid is rapidly deteriorating, and it's a real shame.
Just another one of my crazy ideas. We shouldn't have come.
What do you mean we shouldn't have come? We did. And you better see it through.
I can't.
The heck you can't, Dylan.
Whoa, the heck you can't. It's like the half pint.
She lays into him. You got me into this. You're going to finish it out.
Yeah.
You got me all excited about seeing the ocean. The least you can do is see it with me.
I can't, Laura.
Yes, you can. Dylan, without you. Without you, it's just a lot of water. We've been through a lot to get you there.
It's not like they're going to turn around. Like it seems like ridiculous.
No, that scene is not on my DVDs. So that's,
really?
That's another edited scene. Yeah, and it's an important scene. So I just don't know why that ever happened. Maybe because it was the first edition. Why they thought they had to cut him. But
wow, that's shocking.
Yeah, and so when I see it now, I'm like, oh wow, I don't have ever seen that of mine. And then I go back and play him, and it's not there. I'm coming up with about 70 hours from this is from St. Paul to Los Angeles.
Oh wow,
on a trip. So,
but that's a modern train.
I don't know what the old one. Did we establish how fast the old ones go?
No, but I'm looking up how fast did, I guess, 1881? No, it's about 1880. 1880 trains go. 25 miles per hour.
Oh, well, really? Okay. Yeah. They look like they go faster than that, though.
It might have been a little bit faster. Well, I know in Back to the Future 2, or was it 3, where they get the train up to 88 miles per hour. I don't know if that's possible. But, all right, so here's the rest of that scene.
Well, I have a better team than Odysseus did. And he made it.
So will you, boy.
Just a lot of water, indeed.
So one of the things that's kind of interesting is I'm looking here, and in the 1870s, you were looking about 25 to 35 miles per hour, which is pretty quick. But in the 1890s, they had a train that actually attained a speed of 112 miles per hour.
Oh, wow.
But I think that was like a speed record. I don't think that was a common train. Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be on that train. Come on. I love trains, though. I don't know if you're a big train person.
Yeah. When I was a kid, not so much now, but I loved all that stuff years ago.
Yeah. I mean, when I commuted into Manhattan for about 15 years, so that kind of ruined trains a little bit for me. But it's, you know, the subways and all that stuff kind of gets you after a while. Kind of grody. But
yeah.
But here they go. They've arrived, and Charles is he's going to make his big announcement. And he looks like he just shaved. He really does. It's amazing.
Hey, kids, wake up. End of the line. San Francisco.
And they go to the local mission to get some soup. As Albert says.
Boy, that hot soup sure hit the spot.
Sure did.
That's funny because he said he only had $1.08 left to pay the conductor.
But I think the mission, I think a mission would be like a soup kitchen.
Charity. Yeah, true.
And it look, you know, San Francisco looks pretty clean here. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it's not looking like this right now is kind of what I'm getting at.
Right.
So let's see. They're coming out of the mission and they're just kind of talking.
Sure did. How you feeling, son?
Hey, did he say sure did? This is like kind of an inside joke with my other podcast, Dr. Quinn Cast.
Boy, that hot soup sure hit the spot.
Sure did. How you feeling, son?
All right. The ocean's just a few miles out there. Waiting for me.
It'll take us a little while to get a free ride. They said you could rest in the mission.
No, sir. I couldn't rest.
So, do you know the Smashing Pumpkins are the band?
I have heard of them, yes.
Okay, I don't know if you know what the singer looks like, but this guy looks exactly like Billy Corgan to me. And it's just so funny. To me, it's very funny.
I want to see
you. Are you referring to William Randolph Hearst?
Yeah, except, fake Hearst.
Yeah. I actually looked him up. His name is Bill Ewing, and he's actually behind the scenes now. He did a little bit more after that as far as acting, and then he kind of went behind the scenes producing, directing.
You know, it was a small character in this particular thing. It's a small role, but I liked him a lot. I thought that he really brought a lot to this character, even though he doesn't have too much screen time.
Yeah, I agree. He had a very distinguished kind of a look, too, I thought.
Yeah. But if you were to look at Billy Corgan, you would see. I'll send you a picture is the one I mean. But here they are.
Going to take a short ride down the coast. Check out that land I heard about.
Yes, sir, Mr. Hearst. How about that meeting?
9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Fine, sir.
Yeah. Excuse me. I heard you were going down to the ocean.
Yes?
Please don't touch my wagon, dirty old farmer.
I've got some kids here from Minnesota. They've come a long way to see you. I just wonder if we could ride along with you.
I'm sorry, it's not going to be possible. It's pretty white, I would say, unfortunately. I don't know these kids.
The one boy's very young.
The look that they have on their faces to me is hilarious too. Like they look like orphan kids.
They really do. It's like the Boxcar Children. And the one look on Dylan's face is like, oh my God, he really is playing the part.
Pitiful. Yeah, it looks pitiful.
Yeah.
Let's make it fast. I haven't got a lot of time.
Neither does he.
Nice zinger, Charles. Neither does he. It's not my problem. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's really nice that he did this. We're getting close. We're in this really nice wagon carriage, and Charles is holding this kids have.
Stop here, driver.
Yes, sir.
There's your ocean.
Why don't you two go on ahead? I'll catch up to you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Now, it's summer, right? In California.
They had a coda.
And they're bundled up like there's no tomorrow.
Although it is San Francisco, it can be a little bit cool depending on the time. But that was actually filmed, I read, down in Malibu.
Oh, yeah?
That scene. Yeah. So.
What you were telling me about the boy.
So this is kind of interesting. I'll just play it and comment on it after.
Your children. I might like to use that story in my newspaper. It's very inspirational. I'd like to pay you for it.
Oh, there's no need for that.
It's a long walk back to Minnesota.
And I can't see exactly how much money he's giving, but I see that Lincoln is on the bills, which could mean that it is a bunch of $10 bills, or it could be $100 bills. I can't really see, but I know.
Yeah, I never noticed it that far, that close.
And so I want to look it up. This time I want to see how much money he's receiving. Because there's at least 4 or 5 bills there.
Okay.
And Charles is always like, no, I don't need your money. Nah, it's fine. I'll find a way. Charles is always saying, I don't need the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
The guy's going to write a story about the kid. Least you could do is grab some cash.
Please.
Especially when you're like nearly 2,000 miles away. Like,
exactly.
With no way home and no food, nothing except, you know.
Right.
Except your pocket razor that you're clearly shaving with. Is that the only time we hear seagulls on Little House? I think so, right?
Right.
It must be.
Thank you.
And he stuffs it down his shirt, which I just thought was kind of a funny little thing to do. So he picks him up and brings him to the ocean, which I just think is really, really nice. It's just a total Charles moment. But yeah, Hearst was born April 29th, 1863. So he would have been about, if we're going by the 100 year rule with Little House, he would have been 16 years old here. So, but it's fine. It's Little House. It's
right.
So we get to the ocean and we wake Dylan up.
We're here, son. It's just like I pictured. It runs right into the sky. It doesn't have an end. I'd like to walk from here. Sure.
I was going to play some of the music, but he puts him down to go walk. And for the most part, this is the end. I mean, we see him walking towards the ocean. And he's just, he's walking really slowly at first, and he kind of picks up a pace and he starts running, which is just really great. I was a little bit disappointed that we don't get a Laura voiceover. It just seemed like it would have been a perfect spot for it.
Yeah, you know, I do think that the music score was wonderful, though. I remember replaying that several times just to hear the music score, and as he gets closer to it, they kind of play that anticipation type of music that...
I'll play it. It is good.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
get music like this on Little House very often. This is like super orchestrated.
Yeah. Really, yeah. Really. That's probably one of my favorite pieces.
That's really nice.
In this series.
Oh. Yeah. That's a long piece, but
definitely,
but definitely a fun episode. I'm glad we went through it.
Absolutely.
But I want to thank you so much for taking the time to discuss this with me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be on again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add about this or Little House in general, or anything you might be working on. I don't know. No, it's fine.
Not really at this time. I mean, it's a show that I'm going to forever love. I can tell you that. I've been watching it for 45 years, and it just never gets old to me.
Yeah. I mean, and that's another thing, is you can always find something new in Little House. It just seems like the more you watch, the more you find. That's at least what I've discovered.
Absolutely. And the things that we can pull apart, not necessarily to pick at it, but that we find interesting that we didn't notice the first five times we watched it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Walnut Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast.